Welcome to Food Bites with Sarah Patterson and Kevin Hillier.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to...
Were you waiting for me to speak first?
No, what I did was I pushed... I got ready to start, and then I thought, if Sarah's going to jump in and start, I'll give her that chance.
I was considering bursting into song.
And then, well, I was too.
Why?
What were you going to sing?
Oh, it could have been anything, Kevin.
Well, no, I had a song in my head, but I couldn't remember what the first line was. Mm-hmm. And it's the play school theme. And I can't. Is it Open Wide, Come Inside?
Yes,
it is.
It's play school.
I was going to sing that because
you know, yeah, touch of nostalgia. Our guest this week. If you're familiar with play school, you'd be familiar with this bloke. The wonderful Don Spencer is our guest this week.
Yes, and he was on it for many, many years, and is the only person to have done both as a major line presenter, to have done the Australian version and the English version.
That's quite right, and we found it quite hard to believe that Don is he's 87, so he's in his 88th year.
Well, let's fess up. We've discovered something that Don's been trying to fix. He's been lying about his age for a long time. A bloody long time, Don has.
Unintentionally, so.
Yes. Well, people have been lying about Don's age on his
behalf. There you go.
So we'll get to the bottom of that. We'll talk about his fabulous TV career, which not only includes Play School, but a whole lot of other things. His music career and his music foundation.
Yes, and he has just launched a new single.
Hold On To Your Dream is the name of the song. We're going to play it right at the very end of the podcast. Mm. Also on this show, we're going to introduce you to Andrea Cannon, who's a breast care nurse and team leader for St. Vincent's Hospital. One of the things we can do on this program is raise awareness for very important things like breast cancer and cancer in general and your health in general. So I'm going to talk to Andrea a little later on in the podcast to fill in some details about what exactly some of the work that goes on at St. Vincent's and other hospitals.
Yeah, it's our way in Food Bites, setting an extra place at the table.
Exactly. And on that place at the table is our food poll for this week, which has gone off.
It's gone off like a frog in a sock, the old guacamole, which my mother, I have to say, calls gunkamali. Gunkamali, which is how I refer to it. We have had a huge response. Do you like it on your nachos? Do you like it on anything? Your avocado comes down to the kind of avocado, I guess.
Yes, it does. And we've got many and varied thoughts on it that are coming up on this show. But let's get to our guest. It is the fabulous Don Spencer.
You're listening to Food Bites with Sarah Patterson and Kevin Hillier.
Don, it is lovely to have you as our guest this week. Firstly, how are you keeping these days? Are you fighting fit?
I am fighting fit. Yes, I am thinking of challenging for the world championship boxing. Still in good shape.
Do you work out every day? What's your regime at the age of 82?
Well, I'm actually older than 82.
Wow.
I think Wikipedia's got it wrong, if that's where you got the info.
Oh.
I turned 87 in a couple of days. Yeah,
March 5 days. March 22 is not your birthday, so they've got that way well and truly wrong.
It's March 22, but 1937 I was born.
We've tried to
correct it for years. We've corrected it, I don't know, a dozen times, and it lasts for about a week, and then all of a sudden it goes back to the, I could claim to be younger, I suppose.
Goodness, Don, that's not just a year or a few months out of date. That's years out of date.
Years out of date, I know. Most people would like that, wouldn't they?
I was going to say, there's people who'd pay to have 5 years taken off their Wikipedia post. Oh, well, so your regime's good for an 87-year-old?
I'm still playing tennis and I'm racing around and working full-time with my music and my foundation, you know, the Australian Children's Music Foundation, which we're now in our 22nd year, so it's wonderful.
Tell us a bit about the Australian Children's Music Foundation and how that came to be and the philosophy behind it, Don.
Well, the philosophy is really we use music as a conduit to get kids to get to school, to get educated. But what we do is we provide free permanent music lessons and instruments to disadvantaged children who have suffered trauma or abuse or in disaster areas like when they had the terrible Victorian bushfires. We worked for 3 years to help those kids and various people through the trauma. And we the idea is music inspires creativity and imagination, and it's what kids or what we all need, really, if we want to be successful at what we do. And also the discipline of music, and the fact that music crosses all barriers, brings joy. And where would the world be? Imagine a world without music. So some of these kids have had terrible times, but we turn them around. We've had kids who've been in terrible situations who are now, you know, doing good jobs. And I should have told you, you did ask me how it started, didn't you?
Yes, that's right.
I started it because I had a pretty tough childhood, and music was my absolute solace and comfort. You know, obviously, I've had a career in music. I was often thinking there must be lots of kids out there who could have the same thing, where they feel the world's a bit tough and music might help them be happier and escape. So that's why I started it.
How important is music as a form of expression, Don, especially for kids who probably do, given what they have been through, have trouble communicating?
Well, it's just amazing what it can do, because it's the universal language. Everybody is affected by music. It's almost possible to find somebody who isn't affected in one way or the other when they hear music. It just gets kids involved. It gets them involved with other children. It's also been proven that kids who study music are up to 30% better academically, and it's also socially. There are so many advantages of a music education. It's quite amazing that the government, with all the problems that are going on at the moment, particularly with children and all the people, kids with depression and worried about everything, we do get government help, but it should be a universal thing.
Yeah. Roger Whittaker is the person who, is he the reason that you got into music? You met him in Nairobi and bought a guitar and it went from there. Is that a true story?
Well, yeah, what happened was, when I was young, I did my national service. I was 18, then I went straight overseas and I worked my way around the world for about 5 years before I got into music. But it's in my travels when I went through, you know, the Sudan or Egypt or that, down to Africa, and I ran out of money in Nairobi, so I got a job and worked there for a year. And that's where I met Roger Whittaker. He was, I was playing rugby and he saw the sea, so he invited me down to listen to him in the local coffee bar. And, he had the most beautiful voice even then. And after he did a few of the pop songs, he said, "Here's a song I wrote myself." I went, I'd never thought of being in music, but I went, "Wow, that's phenomenal." And then we were friends. So after I listened to that, a couple of days later, I said, "Look, I write terrible doggerel sort of verses home instead of letters of what I'm doing to my mom and everything. I put it in verse." I said, "But so I don't write poetry. It's just kind of rubbish." But I said, "I've got this one here. I've just been working on. What do you think?" And it had a kind of a cliche title, "Long, Long, Lonely Road," but which I spent a lot of time sitting by. And he liked it, and he put it to music and recorded it. And they played it on, you know, East African radio, and everybody liked it. And I thought, wow, maybe I can write a song. And I never dreamt of being in business. I thought I'd die happy if I got a song published. So after I left Kenya, Roger, of course, went on to great success and unfortunately passed away quite recently, my great friend. We were born on the same day. Okay. And I worked then through the rest of Africa for another year or something, and then I got on a ship in Germany, which I was a helmsman, and we sailed from northern Germany, Hamburg, or Emden is the port, and to Indonesia, and on that I taught myself the guitar and wrote some songs, and then eventually got to England and managed to sell one. Then I started, that's all.
And that, which led you to support shows for people like the Rolling Stones and the Hollies and the Four Seasons. It's quite amazing.
Look, it's quite funny. My very first tour, I was in Canada after spending a year trying to sell my songs, and I did some demonstration records at Abbey Road, of all places. And I went to Canada and I'd been there about 9 or 10 months, and I sent a letter, not like today with what we've got, mobile phones and everything else. But I sent a letter to the guy who got me to record these songs, and I said, did anything happen to my songs? And he said, we've been looking for you for 6 months. You're in the hit parade. Get on a plane tomorrow. Get on a plane now. So I hopped on a plane, went to London. They met me in London, took me to Oxford Street, London, to a store called Charkham's. They made me a blue mohair suit in those days, all dressed up. And the very next day, or the day after that, I was on that pop tour and with Rolling Stone to the support act, and of course. And they were also a support act on the first tour I did. And I stumbled my way through it. I didn't know what the hell I was doing, but I managed to get there. And also I had to sing because I'd only thought of writing songs. They said, no, you've got to hit record singing, so you've got to sing. So it was one of those situations where you fake it until you make it, you know.
Don, tell us about your new single, Hold On To Your Dream. Tell us about the inspiration behind that.
Well, you know, I was talking to a young girl about 14 or 15 in our programs, as I said, I was talking to her, and when I'm talking to the young kids, I always try to teach them to be resilient. You know, I said, you know, you've got to be resilient. Things will happen to you, but you just got to take it and be determined and don't lose your path. Just, you don't have to you don't have to travel the same road you came from, because that wasn't good. So you've got to, if you want to do something, make sure you hang on to it. And also I said, like, if you got a dream, hold on to it no matter what. And then this little 14-year-old girl said, I don't know what you mean exactly. And I said, well, she was trying to write a song. And I said, tell you what I'll do. I'll write a song for you. And that's why I wrote it. And the only way I could write it was to really write about myself. So that's how it came about.
Yeah, it's a lovely lyric and a really nice song. Congratulations on it. It's terrific.
Thank you. Thank you.
And you have an album coming on the back of that?
Yes, it won't be out for a few months, but we'll be releasing a few songs. Prior to that, I put a famous poem to music, Rudyard Kipling's poem. But I've got a lot of songs coming on. They're not all moral songs. they're not immoral, but I mean, they're just ordinary songs.
Don, you're obviously a very well-travelled man, and this is a food-based show. Do you have a very well-travelled palate as well?
Oh, gosh, I'm a very fussy eater ever since I was a child. I mean, honestly, I could live on peanuts and potatoes. I have nuts every day of my life. If I was having a meal and someone said, do you want to swap my steak for potatoes? I'd say, yeah, I'll take the potatoes. Here's my steak. You know, I'm not a great foodie, but I do love Thai food, and I love spaghetti, and I cook the odd stir-fry. But I've got real hang-ups. The texture of food is everything to me, and if I don't like the texture, how it goes. I love every vegetable in the world except eggplant, because I hate the texture. And I've got hang-ups. I don't eat ducks, because we had pet ducks when I was a child. My mother was one of 14 kids, and we had pet ducks, and I loved them. They'd walk around and chatter out, and then one day Mum cooked one of them for Easter.
Oh, no.
And I can never touch that. So when I traveled through Africa, I was there for just on 3 years, my travels, I never touched meat there, because they used to just see it hanging out there. And I think I could say I'm probably the only person in the world who'd been in Africa for 3 years and didn't get dysentery.
There you go. There's a lesson.
What
there.
A claim to fame.
It's a wonderful claim to fame. Hey, Don, just still on the subject of food, do you have a sweet tooth? Are there any, guilty pleasures you enjoy?
Look, I don't eat dessert. I do like it. You know, I like, you know, yeah, I love any fruit, and I like, yeah, I like ice cream, but I'm not a real foodie. You know, as I said, I guess Yeah, for a food program, I'm a loser.
No, no, absolutely not. Well, we'll give one of the clinches here is coffee or tea. What's your choice there?
Ah, I love them both. I actually have a coffee in the morning. I kind of need a coffee to get me started, but it has to be the real thing. I can't do instant coffee or anything like that. So,
good man.
My day normally starts with being unable to barely talk or walk, and then I can walk, but I have to get up, go and have a good coffee, and then my day starts. And I'm a very slow starter, and I'm at my absolute best if I have to run for my life or swim or fight for my life. I do it at about 11 o'clock at night.
Hey, Don, a whole generation would remember you fondly for your long tenure on play school. What comes to mind when you think back of those days?
Oh, well, you know, I love doing play school. I always loved writing songs for kids and things, and it was one of the best periods. Funnily enough, I just was a guest on an episode the week before last, again. It was just wonderful, the people who wrote the program and everything, and my co-presenters were all lovely, lovely people, and I really enjoyed it, and I did it in England as well. So it's been a big part of my life, and it's beautiful because, I'm not kidding, there's hardly a day goes by somebody doesn't say hello or do something for play school. I filled up my car the other day at a petrol station and went to pay, and the woman said, those people over there said they want to pay for your petrol, and they were in a car, and I said, thank you, and they said, thanks for the music.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Oh, isn't that good?
Yeah, I it's very nice. I always get lovely reaction, and it's a big part of my life, and I'm very happy I did it. And play school was also the launch, the reason I launched all those children's songs like Feathers for Our Fins or Bob the Kelpie and that, because I said to them, we're still singing nursery rhymes and all this stuff. I said, but I can't. We never sing a song about Australia, so I'm going to write some. And so subsequently I did, you know, many, many, many albums about Australia, not just Australian animals, but it was a good trigger for me to write something different.
Don, you dabbled in acting for a few little bits and pieces of Sons and Daughters and the Barry McKenzie movie. One that caught my eye that I wanted to ask you about was you did a series at one stage of TV comedy with Ronnie Barker.
I did, yeah. He marvellous man, of course, and what a guy. Yeah, I did a radio BBC show with him. For a whole series. In the course of my other programs I was doing for the BBC, I met Ronnie Corbett. This is before they started the two Ronnies. So they were both lovely guys.
Yeah, no, interesting. I didn't realize you dabbled in that area as well as all the other things that that you've done.
Well, I'll tell you what I did. Yeah. I did that because I couldn't always make a living out of my performing or songwriting, and I had a bit of a contractual problem. So I thought, well, I'll start acting. So I did quite a lot of acting, but I did it only until I got my music back on track, and then I stopped.
Yep. Well, you would have made a fortune out of Fireball XL5, the theme song for that Hello television series of its time.
Yes, it was. It was pretty big.
It was.
Yeah, that was the one that got me going. It was very good for me, and it was played every week forever, and they keep repeating it. So they're just starting it now, changing it, putting it to colour. So I hope they keep the same theme song.
Yeah, it's good little song.
Yeah, it is a good little song, yeah.
Oh, it's a great little song. Don, look, best of luck with Hold On To Your Dream. It's a lovely song. It's a lovely sentiment that's in that song, and I think paints a really nice picture for kids to get involved with. And the Australian Children's Music Foundation obviously is something near and dear and close to your heart. Keep up the great work with that.
Thank you.
I will. Thank you very much. Thanks. Lovely talking to
Thanks
you.
Thanks for being on the show.
Thanks,
Don.
Thanks, Don.
My pleasure.
There's Don. Yeah. Lovely to have you, man. As I said, we'll play a little bit for you of Hold On To Your Dream at the end. It's a really lovely song.
Also,
really.
Which we didn't mention in the interview, but he is the dad of Danielle Spencer, also a great musician in her own right.
And an actress.
Yes.
guess.
Yes.
All right, let's get to the food poll, and then we're going to introduce you to Andrea Cannon from the St. Vincent's Hospital. She's a breast care nurse there and also the team leader. But
ding dong, food poll time. Guacamole, are you for it or are you again it, as Kevin would say? Darren Hinch is going to start us off, and he is certainly in favour of it. He says yes.
Cherie Dodson says yes, please.
David says yes, but it has to be a quality avocado, nothing stringy. Oh, don't you hate it when the avocados are stringy?
Yes.
Yes.
Silvana said it's a yes from me.
Sue Landry, yay.
Lisa Marie says yay all the way.
Rebecca says a big, massive yay. I miss Australian avocado. She, of course, is in Thailand.
You haven't been to the supermarket lately, Rebecca. Joylene says yay, yummo.
Kevin likes to say could open the batting for Australia with that one.
Thanks.
Di Roll says yay big time.
Dean Felton says, oh, yay, of course, no question.
Peter Mobbs, yay.
Carly says a big yay, especially in Jamie Oliver's guac recipe.
Oh, I bet that would be beautiful.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Terry says, no, thank you.
Lydia says, nay.
Glenn, yumbo, Paddo.
Sharon says, yummy.
For Kim Nicholas, it is a big yay.
Sue Hosking says, yay, the only acceptable way to eat avocado.
Natalie says, yay.
Uriel Cooper, yay.
Leonie, yay.
Pete Tanowski, yay.
Kel, yay.
Angie says, yay.
Ali, oh, there's a vomit emoji.
No, no.
She put the handbrake on.
When I see the vomit emoji, I always feel the need to want to go, woo, woo. Anyway.
Oh, great. Can you just do it somewhere
okay. Further
away from
me? Fran says yay.
Deb Murphy says big yay.
Karen Young says yay, especially when Melissa makes
That's
it.
That's her daughter, I think.
All right.
Yes. I know. Joe says yay.
Rachel says yay if it's homemade or maybe made by Melissa.
Yes. Michelle says yay.
Davin says definitely yes.
Now, Nikki says, are you even Australian if you don't like avo? It's a big yes from her.
I know, Nikki. She's a pom.
Oh.
Jason Richardson says, it's my favourite. I love avocado.
Does he say it like that? I love avocado.
He does, because it's his favourite would be he'd be betting on it. There's Jason, of course, from Channel 7's racing coverage.
There you go. Now, Kate Fitzpatrick,
yes,
the wonderful Kate.
That one.
Actor.
Yes.
Cricket commentator.
Yes, currently starring in Wicked
there you go.
On stage.
It's a yay from her.
Stephen Quatermain. Oh, did he open the floodgates? Oh. Quarters says, I'm not an avocado fan despite raw onion.
No, despise, it, I think.
And despises raw onion. So it's a big no for me. And then can I just say,
yes,
the floodgates open and the amount of support that Stephen Quatermain garnered.
For being anti-avocado.
The I'm with Q was almost a hashtag. So there was literally dozens and dozens of people who jumped on. Well, I'm with Q. Yeah. I'm with you.
Quarters generates some great discussion in his own right.
He does.
Now, old Crokey, we love old Crokey, and
yes,
he says, I struggle to understand the attraction of avocado. No amount of blending with additives will entice me. However, don't expect the corn chips to remain untouched.
Go on, you old croaky. Candace White says a huge yay.
Dave Culbert. Now, he would be the athletic.
Yes. A former guest on this
star,
program.
Yes.
Former guest.
Thumbs up from him.
And another former guest on this program, Merv Hughes. Yep.
Thank you,
Merv. Yep.
Short but sweet.
Now, the voting is in, and it is a resounding landslide.
Oh, yeah.
Against the guacamole? No, it's four. Yes, 87.5%.
Wow.
No, 12.5%.
You know, I feel if you have an aversion to avocados, you either really, really hate them or you really love them. There's not very much of an in-between, and it does come down. Like, you've got the shepherd variety avocado and you've got the Hass.
Yeah.
And sometimes it can all depend on what makes a nice guac.
We're currently in the changeover from the shepherds to the Hass, and the Hass a totally different one to try and pick one out of the box.
Hass have a much more, I think, buttery sort of texture to them and lovely spreadable texture.
Yeah,
however,
better with that.
However, the other kind.
Shepherds.
The shepherds, which I've nearly just said. Yeah, and they don't go brown, the shepherds.
Ah, okay. Yeah, they has to go brown very quick.
Mm.
Very quick indeed.
A bit like you and me. We tend to curdle and go brown.
We do. We do.
Sorry.
But enough of that. Thank you for being part of what was a massive another one up on Friday. All the social media platforms, please jump on and take part in it. Now, I want to introduce you to Andrea Cannon. Andrea is a breast care nurse. She's also the team leader at St. Vincent's Hospital. And they've done a few new things at the hospital that we want to talk to Andrea about. But most of all, just want to, again, raise awareness for our own health, for everybody's health, and how we can help each other achieving, you know, the best possible life we can get. And people like Andrea help us do that. So we thought it'd be nice to introduce her to you. And at the end of Andrea, we're going to play a little bit of Don Spencer's really lovely new single. It's called Hold On To Your Dream.
You're listening to Food Bites with Sarah Patterson and Kevin Hillier.
Firstly, let's start with a little bit on your story, Andrea. Well, how did you get into nursing and into breast care nursing?
Oh, well, I went straight into nursing from school because I always wanted to be a nurse. And fortunately, throughout my I trained through the university, and I had got a part-time job at Peter MacCallum at the time, and worked on the breast unit and fell in love with oncology, and have stayed in it ever since. So I've worked in public and private and non-for-profit, and then I joined St. Vincent's Public 12 months ago, and it's a great unit to work for, and it's a great hospital. So that's where I am at the moment. So I've been a breast care nurse for probably about 25 years, and I was one of the first breast care nurses in Victoria, Australia. So, yeah, that's my story.
So, Andrea, what is the role of a breast care nurse?
The role of a breast care nurse is in relation to coordination of care of women, education, support, advocacy, and I suppose it's someone that a patient can go to and ask any question, whether no matter what it is, and that we support women throughout their breast cancer experience from their diagnosis right through their treatment and afterwards. Breast care nurses have really come to the forefront because of the Jane McGrath Foundation, and we have got three breast care nurses at St. Vincent's. We have one McGrath metastatic breast care nurse. I think there's a little bit of confusion sometimes because breast care nurses, whether you're supported by the McGrath Foundation or supported by the hospital where you work, we all do the same thing. It's a real privilege to be a breast care nurse.
What are the questions that women ask you? What are the most asked questions, Andrea?
Well, that's a million-dollar question. All breast cancers are different, and I think women really want to understand what they've been diagnosed, about the pathology, but also about the treatment they're about to undertake, and why possibly are they having this treatment rather than that treatment. So I think it's them really guiding them and making sure they understand their diagnosis of breast cancer or any cancer diagnosis and guiding them through. I think any woman who's diagnosed and then get diagnosed with breast cancer as well are connected to somewhere in their community, whether they're a mother, a sister, a friend, a work colleague, and everyone's got their story about breast cancer, but every breast cancer story is very different, and it's ensuring that the woman that is in front of you and we're caring for understands their situation and guiding them through that.
And Andrea, it's obviously about so much more than just the medical diagnosis. It's a very, very vulnerable time for a woman mentally as well as physically.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know that you spoke to Carolyn Baker the other week, the head of our unit. It's really important that we look after the whole holistic part of the woman. So it's not just a physical aspect. It's a psychological aspect of a woman's care, which is really important because they will get through their treatment, but the psychological aspect carries through them with them for the rest of their lives. And I think it's really ensuring that we support them during that and get them the extra support if they need to through our psycho-oncology team, and really supporting them, connecting with other women going through a similar experience, et cetera. And I suppose my having done this position for a long time, the importance of introducing a program such as the Wigan Head Studio at St. Vincent's recently is really important because, you know, for all oncology patients confronting treatment, not all treatments do you lose your hair, but many of them you do. And it's such a visual thing to the whole wide world that something's going on in your life, whereas other aspects, you know, in relation to breast surgery, you can cover up with your clothing, etc. Whereas I think hair is a big major factor that many women struggle with during treatment.
It's a real self-esteem issue, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Life gets turned upside down when you get a cancer diagnosis, and it's trying to ensure that we look after them in all aspects, so the whole person rather than just, you know, focusing on the treatment and the cancer that they're experiencing. So, yeah, and it's a beautiful thing that, you know, a woman can come into the Wigan Headwear Studio not feeling that great about herself, and suddenly, you know, you can't change everything, but, you know, actually providing them with something that can make them look a little bit more back to where they were previously is really helpful.
Just that whole support mechanism around the patient. How important are men in the process of this? And what would you tell me or any man in terms of how we can help?
That is a million-dollar question, Kevin. I think it's really important for the men in women's lives in relation to breast cancer that they support them in the way that they best feel and they seek help for themselves as well, because I think often their partners or the men in their lives can come to the first few appointments, but then life goes on and, you know, a diagnosis of any cancer isn't over in a week or two. It goes on for a period of months, if not years. So therefore, I think that they have a full understanding and they seek out people like the breast care nurses or the nurse coordinators in their particular cancer stream to ask any questions that they're unsure of, so they have a clear understanding, because it is a challenge for someone that's in a relationship or connected to that person, because, you know, people ask them about the person that's going through the treatment, not really asking them about themselves. My thing would be to ask any questions that you've got in relation to that you're unsure about, but also to look after yourself. I think it's really important when you're a carer looking after someone that you have a good GP and that you access them for yourself so that you can remain well and healthy to be able to support that person going through their cancer journey.
And how can people help? I mean, people always talk the talk about getting involved and that. What's the best way people who are listening to this now can get involved?
Well, obviously, financially, I think we've established a service at St. Vincent's, the Wigan Headwear Studio, and there's many other things that through the St. Vincent's Foundation, if they'd like to donate, because we've set up this wonderful, valuable service to serve patients, but the only way it can be sustainable moving forward is that we get the financial support that we need to be able to provide a service like this, because the Wigan Headwear Studio is not just available to breast cancer patients, it's available to all oncology patients, and I think that's a really important thing to say. So financially, but there's also other opportunities. Otherwise, offer your expertise in volunteering in relation to helping around the hospital. We have probably 8 to 10 volunteers that help out with our breast unit doing various tasks throughout the week, and that's always just, we greatly appreciate that. So there's lots of ways to help. If you just want to reach out, we can certainly speak with you and guide you through what's available.
Beautiful. Thank you, Andrea. Appreciate your time. Keep up the great work.
Thank you.
Thanks, Kevin. Thanks, Sarah. Bye.
I've been around a long time. I've been up, I've been down. I've seen some things I wish I'd never seen. Been some places wish I'd never been. Don't know much, but I know something. Always had a dream to see me through. Without a dream to keep me hanging on, sometimes I wonder where I might have gone. Hold on to your dream. Don't ever let go. Don't let obstacles in your way. Don't let your dream ever fade away. Hold on to your dream. Whatever you do, if you ever let go,